recent headline in the New York Times seems to have struck quite a nerve. Alongside, and of course this is true, and it's about time. My friends and colleagues frequently forward news stories to me, and this one article is forwarded to me by more than any other in past many years, so I know you're going to be interested. The story was called In Sweetie and Dear, A Hurt for the Elderly. It was about elder speak, the tendency of too many adults to talk down to the elderly, and the assumption that somehow an older person can't comprehend or needs a special tone of voice, almost like baby talk, thus the sweetie or dear. Well, the article actually cited research studies that have been done on groups of older people, and I mean older than 50, which to me is young, and found that to many of those, the positive perceptions of aging actually lived, people with positive perceptions of aging actually lived 7 years longer on average. Another study showed that Alzheimer's patients became agitated when they were spoken to as if they were children. So if any of this sounds familiar to you, I know you'll be interested in hearing from our guest, one of our favorites, Dr. Sharon Brangman, geriatrician and professor of medicine at SUNY Upstate, who joins us on the phone this morning. Good morning, Dr. Brangman.
Oh, good morning, Tricia. How are you?
Now, you know, I'm going to guess that some people would say that when they talk in this elder speak, their intention is really to be kind. But it doesn't really work that way, does it?
Yeah, I think that's their intention. They are trying to think of a way of being nice to the person they're caring for. But I think it's an example of how we've internalized a lot of negative images of aging, and we marginalize older people by talking to them in these kinds of, quote, terms of endearment.
Well, my question is, have patients mentioned this to you before? I mean, the entire population of patients you see is in this older category.
Oh, definitely. Patients have told me many times how certain doctors don't talk to them anymore. They just talk to their caregiver or somebody who might come to them. Or they say, you know, people think that once you get old, you become an idiot or you become a child again. And we tend to infantilize older people. We call them cute and sweet and dear and honey. And we forget that these have negative meanings to a lot of older people.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, if you become a caregiver, it's sort of as the caregiver throws you back into that position where maybe you were caring for young children when your babies were born and that kind of a thing. I think the caregivers don't even realize in a lot of ways they're doing that, do they?
No, they don't realize it, and there are some older people who don't mind it, so we're not talking about everyone in general, but I do know that a lot of my patients have told me that as they get older, they become invisible, and people stop seeing them, stop talking to them, stop relating to them, or if they do, they do it in a way that that indicates that they don't see them as a full person worthy of respect.
Well, and I think that's the key, is the whole respect issue. I know there were a couple of studies that were cited in the New York Times article. Are you familiar with these studies?
Well, I've heard about them before. Mm-hmm. I did not read this study per se. However, the information that's being conveyed in that study is something that we have all known in the field of geriatrics and gerontology for a long time. And the other point is there's actually cultural connotations to this in certain cultural groups. It's really a sign of disrespect to call someone other than their full title. For instance, in African American elders, it is very disrespectful for someone younger to call someone by their first name or to call them honey or dear.
Well, you know, it seems to me that it's been disrespectful up until the last few years. I mean, I still call my parents by Mr. or Mrs., or my parents' friends by Mr. and Mrs., and they want to correct me and say, please call me by my first name, but I wasn't raised that way. And yet I see in nursing homes and other places where you see seniors, you see younger people calling older people by their first names all the time. And I can see where that would get very uncomfortable.
Well, it is for this group of elders who were raised in a different society and a different level of cultural normality. We have become a lot less informal in our intervention, in our interactions, and I think that's a problem for a lot of older people.
Well, and there are probably a couple of things we can do so people can have takeaways from what we've learned this morning. Number one would be for those of us who are the younger person in a two-person conversation to recognize when we might actually be doing some of this elder speak.
I think it's important to address, and this is something I tell my medical students when I'm talking to them about communicating with older adults, is to address the person by their full title, Mr., Mrs., Reverend, mm-hmm. whatever, until the person tells you otherwise.
Ah, and that's a great guideline.
If they say hey, please call me Sue or John, then you can take it from there.
And then, too, I would think that within places where you find seniors, whether they would be nursing homes or assisted living centers, some of these folks should probably be getting training, too, about how to do just the same as what you're talking about.
I think that's very important. I think during the initial admission process to any of these facilities, there should be a discussion as how would this person like to be addressed.
And I think that's a great idea. I'm thinking, too, the holidays are coming up. There might be some things that some of the folks who are feeling disrespected can do within their families. I mean, I suppose they could sit at the Thanksgiving table and say, you know, I heard this conversation on the radio about people who talk down to elders, and just let the conversation go, but make their family members aware of it in that way.
I think that's important also. And then adult children who are starting to take over some responsibilities for their parents' care have to realize that this may not mean a full-fledged ability to disregard anything that their parents have to say.
Well, and that's true. And I suppose, too, as caregivers and when we are the children of older parents, when we go to places like the doctor's office with our parents, if we see that the doctor's addressing us, we could say, this is my dad, please talk to him, or this is my mom, please talk to her.
Right. You have to advocate in lots of different ways. And I think, you know, to give adult children some credit, they are really trying to do what's best for their parents, and they may not be aware of the way this can kind of infantilize their mother or father by completely taking over their voice.
Well, and plus, I've got to think that sometimes the parents just, they know there's a disconnect, but they can't even understand what it is.
Right. They may not be able to keep up with the caliber of the conversation or what's going on, but it's still important to keep them in the loop.
And make sure that they're still respected.
Exactly.
Well, Dr. Sharon Brangman, thank you so much. You have cleared up this story for us. I think we all understand exactly what it means, and I think it's great advice. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Dealing with loss and our empty nest, or the wonderful thing about heartache. Well, if you've been listening to Checkup from the Neck Up for a while, you know that my wife and I have two kids. Our younger son just left for college, and our older son just graduated college, came home for the summer, and moved to Florida a week ago. Now, the psychology textbooks talk about this time in the life of a family as the kids separating from mom and dad and establishing their own identities. But reading that didn't prepare me for how this would actually play out and feel. With both of them home over the summer, my wife and I, with some irritation, watched them get up at noon and lounge around doing who knows what on the computer. We listened to alien cell phone ringtones going off before dinner, during dinner, after dinner, then them moving from room to room, talking loudly, putting off tasks mom and dad thought were essential, or doing them at the last second, or worse, asking us to help with something really urgent just as we're going to bed. Then afterwards, taking my car to go out to play at midnight, back at 3, loudly thumping up the stairs. What about the laundry, the garbage, mowing the lawn? And what about getting a job? We wondered, if they behave like this out in the world, how will they survive? And of course, they wouldn't. Just now, I'm understanding this was childhood and parenthood's last hurrah. The last time mom and dad do the worrying and pay the bills, and the kids just play. A big surprise was how much I wanted them to go, to get out of our house and into their own lives and let my wife and I live ours in what, I thought I'd never say this, my parents called peace and quiet. And then they left. For over a year, people have been saying to us, so you're about to be empty nesters. But I wasn't ready for how shocking and painful peace and quiet are. How much longing there would be to hear their voices, see their faces, get a hug, even if interrupted with, gotta go, going to see Batman 17 with friends. Our hearts are aching. But inside, an amazing discovery. The more we feel our heartache, the more we know what it really means, that we love each other and always will, and nothing else really matters. So bon voyage, sweetie pies. All our love on your journey. And bring on those grandchildren. We've got lots of room in this empty nest. lots of room to love them too. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.